Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench.
Hello and welcome back to Fighting on Film. This week we have an incredibly special episode for everyone. Rob and I can't even remember where we came across the existence of this film. It's the first British Falklands War movie, isn't it?
Yeah, like that, without a doubt. And we're recording live together, by the way, for the first time.
Indeed.
So this is a first as well.
Because we have just finished
watching it.
So you've seen Ungentlemanly Act,
yep.
And hopefully you've listened to the podcast we did with the director. You've probably seen Tumbledown, but I guarantee you, you have not seen 1987's Silent Heroes.
Yeah, like, and this is going to be a looser format than usual, like recording our first thoughts. But what a fever dream!
Yeah, that was insane. Like, there's so little about this film. There's so little footprint of, you know, reviews or mentions of it. There's like one mention of it on a blog where it does like a review of two of the director's films.
Yeah,
but then the IMDb for it is
threadbare at best.
Yeah. So we somehow found out about this.
From that blog.
Yeah, we must have been that blog. We must have been Googling like British Falklands war movies, and that's come up.
Yeah.
So we were looking for a copy. We're like, where can I find this? I mean, this is about 2 years ago.
Yeah, this is when we started the show. Yeah. Like, this has been one of those legacy movies we've been trying to find.
And I found a ex-rental copy VHS. In Greece.
From Greece.
And we pulled the trigger on that bad boy.
Yeah.
And it was great. So it came in the post, opened it up, and I was like, oh, great. Maybe I've got like an old VHS player in the loft, a combi or something, or I can send it off to one of those people that like digitize them.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at it, and I go to put like the bubble wrap in the bin. And I feel like that's a bit heavy. So I open up the bubble wrap, and there, the absolute Don, the hero that had sold me this.
The silent hero.
Right? That had sold me this, had included a rip on a DVD, like, God. The kind that you used to, like, rip stuff onto from your computer in 2003.
Yeah, like an unbranded blank disc.
Yeah, like a SanDisk DVD-R.
Yeah.
You know, it just so happened that, you know, I was coming to see Rob, and we got to sit and enjoy it together. Well, actually, I made sure like the film was on the disc first.
Yeah, you know.
So I put it into my computer doesn't have a disc drive. My mum's older computer does. So amazing. I'm like there on my mum's computer, flicking through to see if it is actually a film. but you have to get past 8 minutes of trailer. Some... trailer is a very loose.
Yeah. So like this is one of the rare. It's obviously that, you know, there was a video boom in the '80s, nineties. You know, it was a dominant platform, and people make their own movies. You get a straight to video, you know, boom and all that. Like I was saying, but America seems to have all those kind of glorious like straight to video movies. We don't really seem to have any.
No,
and this feels like the lost, like British.
It does.
I don't even want to say B movie. It's like a C movie.
Yeah.
And there are loads of them. You go look it up. It's you know, any fans of the YouTube channel Red Letter Media, it's those kind of films. And it's bizarre. Like, it starts with these Greek trailers that are cut really weird.
Yeah, it's literally like the title credits, and then
Like there was a Western, there was a horror, there was a drama.
There was like a dance DVD. VHS.
We should have known the kind of thing we were getting into. Going in, because the kind of movies that were advertised before were exactly the kind of thing
that followed
that this would have an ad for. Like, this movie would have had an ad that bizarre.
Yeah.
But the movie's very interesting, is that it plays itself quite straight for probably
an hour, three quarters of an hour.
Yeah.
And we're sat there going, this is actually not bad.
You know, the mixing's a bit off. Yeah. The dub could be better. The sound design's a bit loud in places. Yeah, it's clearly been edited in like an early, like something like Video Toaster, if you know what that is.
Yeah.
Really early editing software. Like, you know, it's probably gone reel to reel editing.
Mm.
Quite difficult.
Probably filmed on VHS.
Filmed on VHS, definitely. Like that, yeah, it would have been. You know, and it's got external shots in London. They've got some nice sets. There's decent enough.
Set like pieces.
A SAS raid in
there,
which is fine. And there's an extensive use of Falklands War news footage that adds to it.
Yeah.
Both
UK and Argentine, which I thought was good.
Interesting. Whether it was shot in the Falklands War Argentine footage, we don't know. No, but it's interesting to have it.
Like clips of the junta.
Yeah.
Clips of like what were clearly Argentine pilots getting ready for a. You know, sorting, that sort of stuff.
Pucara flying around.
Yeah.
Like, but then it's clearly like based off of. There's a character who gets badly burned on the Galahad, and he's clearly based off Simon Westall.
Is it Weston?
Simon Weston, sorry.
Well, Rob, it's fine. The events shown in this film are based on fact, but the characters portrayed are purely fictitious. Yeah. Any resemblance to actual persons living or dead is coincidental. I mean, the first sentence of that is wild in itself. Like, the events shown in this film are based on fact.
Oof. Yeah. So the movie does a weird thing where, and this is different for this week, where we're not going to go through production. We're not going to really go through cast.
I can give you a little bit if you want.
You want a little bit? Yeah, you can do it if you can.
I literally just grabbed a little bit before we sat down. So this is a film directed by Richard Driscoll. This is his second film. And then he didn't direct again until 2001.
Yeah.
No idea why. I do actually know, because he was in EastEnders.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like in the mid-90s.
Oh, okay.
He was also an X-Wing pilot in Return of the Jedi.
Right.
In like a little tiny clip. He was in 4 episodes of Jenny's War in the mid-80s, which is like, I think it's an internment camp.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen it. And then he comes back to directing in 2001. And he's never really done anything else similar to Silent Heroes. It's mostly horror stuff. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Because there's a link there. Yeah, he embezzled lots of money, didn't he?
Apparently. Cinematography was covered by Alan Trow. And he also did the cinematography for Chasing the Deer, which is like a post-Culloden Highlands film about... I can't remember the exact... It's been on TV again recently.
Right.
But it's not a big budget film.
Right.
But it is the closest thing. And then he did a film called Kasulat, which was a film set during the... He directed it in 2017, set during the Kosovan War.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Fair enough.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
The most notable person in the film, well...
Actor-wise,
is Bob Flagg.
Okay.
And he plays the minister...
Well, that's who he was. Fair enough.
There's a subtext to the film, like a B plot of them talking to a minister to try and get information about the war. And he played Big Brother in 1984, the 1984 version.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Robert Wilford plays John Hardcastle, the wounded SAS member. And Martin Eilert plays James Hammond, the journalist. And could not find anything about either of those actors. Mm. There's no real online presence at all. So
yeah,
that basically rounds us out.
To be fair, for what they have to do, like, when you can hear them, because sometimes the dub's a bit off.
The mix was fantastic. Excellent.
They seem to be doing an okay job. And then they don't. Like, it's really bizarre.
And you know what I think it is? I think it's the script.
Well, the script is horrible.
The script is, yeah.
It doesn't know what it wants to be.
I thought the initial scene with them in the hospital was good. So before we get into this, let me just, like, try and give a synopsis.
Nutshell it.
Yeah, let me nutshell it.
Elevator.
Jump in if you want, Rob. But basically, it follows a journalist who's investigating the Falklands conflict as it's happening.
It's confusing at best.
And then he's interviewing a SAS, wounded SAS member, who is badly burned, a.k.a. Simon Weston.
Mm-hmm.
Allah, I should say. And then it's intercut with... It kind of jumps back chronologically all over the place.
Mm.
The journalist tries to talk to a minister to get information. He's then interviewing Hardcastle for like an exclusive,
like expose.
Yeah, like, was the war worth it kind of thing. Mm.
But while it's going on, it's very muddled.
It is. And this is all intercut with some nice set pieces, some pretty, you know, cool stuff in there.
Yeah, decent for the level we're at.
And then towards the end of the film, it just goes batshit. We'll come to that. I can't even.
It just goes off on one, like half an hour. Maybe 20 minutes towards the end. It felt like a half hour.
It felt like a long time. The final act was long.
So, you know, I mean, what's going on is you obviously, as you said, you've got this whole, the journalist is uncovering what's going on, but then you've got this really weird framing of it all where you get the war regurgitated back at you.
Oh, it's so bizarre.
From the, Hardcastle character who's in the hospital bed with his face burnt, and he's like regurgitating the war to you, but really potted.
Yeah,
and the things that he obviously after the fact he would have known because it was all reported quite well at the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's confusing because it's still going on, and he's giving like these really accurate, well-written, researched facts.
He's talking about like ships that are being hit, which he wouldn't have seen.
Yeah.
And things that are happening that he wouldn't have seen.
Yeah.
And then there's certain like things that are muddled. Like they talk about like ships are going towards the South Georgia when he means they're going to the Falklands.
Mm.
And there's all kinds of like weird things that are just like,
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously me and Matt have written stuff on the war. We've made documentaries on things that happen, so it stands out to us. I don't necessarily think if you
watching it back in 87 you might not unless you had like a particular interest,
you know, you'd seen Task Force South on BBC Two when it came out, like I get it, but it's just jarring that he knows all this stuff off the top of his head. And it's even more jarring that you've got this journalist.
It's the way he says it.
Yeah, it's the way it's returned back. It's like we're reading a Wikipedia entry.
It really does feel like it. It's not an expose. It's just like, if he just talked about the SAS stuff, he'd be doing. But they didn't know.
There's not enough to talk about.
They didn't know anything about, you know, the raid on the airfield.
Things like Pebble Island.
And ops around Stanley and all that kind of thing. They kind of like hint at stuff, but it's never like...
It's not done properly. It's not explored properly. But then and then you've got this journalist who is trying to leak stories about the war to the public.
Yeah.
And then he gets given these photos by some shady other journalist, and they're meant to be like these expo, like these shocking photos of napalm being used and atrocities on both sides. And then he's in his house because he's seen these photos and he's all upset and he's drinking neat gin and he's looking at photos with like captions that are clearly cut out of a magazine or something.
Some classic journalism tropes going on.
Yeah. And there's like a picture of the antelope going up, which hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
In the movie or in the narrative of the
of when he was doing the research
we're talking about. So I'm like, oh my god, come on, like rookie stuff, annoying.
Yeah. The chronology and of it is
it's all over the shop. Yeah. It's very scattergun and it's very confusing. I mean, but to be fair, we could swing into the alley tally quite quickly because there is silver linings.
There is for our
co-host Matt. So yeah. I'll move over and let Matthew explain the alley for you this week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's time for Alley Tally on Fighting on Film.
Sterlings.
A whole heap.
Anyway, before I come on to the Sterlings, let's talk about the intro. So the film begins with a small preamble and then explaining the SAS. And
who apparently were devised in 1950.
Yeah, and how we were going to, HMS Endurance was being recalled. Anyway, it starts in Belfast, and I'm like, ooh.
1980,
yeah. And this lone, clearly SAS counterterrorism operator kicks the door in. MP5.
Loved it.
Classic MP5. Guns down a terrorist who's holding like a high power or something.
Yeah.
And then there's a dude sat in a chair with what looks like a block of Semtex taped to his face.
Yeah.
Which then blows up and his fucking head off.
It's crazy. Proper video nasty stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't expecting it, but.
No, we weren't.
And then there's like a short sequence of a hijacked aircraft.
It's like Raider Entebbe stuff.
It is, like three guys go aboard with MP5s and there's. The way it's filmed is great because it's completely dark.
They're some of the best filmed parts of the movie. And they may be like 30 seconds each at best.
I know. I mean, every time someone gets shot, the film kind of like does a freeze frame.
Yeah. Like the impact of the bullets. That was quite well done.
It went well.
We thought it was interesting that even at this point in 1987, the SAS in popular memory is more geared towards what they did in the Falklands and the embassy raid.
Yeah.
Because
arguably still is.
Very much still is. So we thought it was weird they showed them raiding a plane, and I'm sure they've done that in their history. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But like it was like, well, embassy raid.
Just have some lads run up a staircase.
Yeah, it's all you need.
Or like coming through a window. Or
yeah, you yeah, don't need not... to sell them as hard as they do. I kind of appreciate that they do it.
Yeah.
But like it's weird.
The kit they're in is okay.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the assault vests they're wearing are a little bit long.
Yeah.
And weird.
They're like probably
like
gilets from what's the
Army shop? Navy.
Blacks or
Blacks or Army Navy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then we get the really good stuff, which is the SAS team, the Falklands are invaded, and the SAS team is sent and they're infilling for a raid on something around the edge of Stanley, it's described, which isn't it? And we later find out that it's ahead of the main task force, which isn't reality.
No.
It gets a bit confused because they show like Gritviken and South Georgia, and
they're just they're using any establishing shots they have, from stock footage.
Yeah, it's not like they could nip down there and get some B-roll.
It's not on this budget, crikey. Yeah. But they got DPM on, 68 DPM.
Yeah.
They've got
Cold weather caps
and 58 webbing. But at this time, that stuff is
more SAS belt rig as well.
SAS belt rig on one of the guys, which I think was just 58 pattern pouches.
Yeah, with the yoke off.
Yeah, anything fancy. It's not like the fancy drop pouch or anything.
No.
But because I think I'm going to cut it some slack, then I'm going to say, well, at the time, this is easily gettable stuff.
I can tell you now from the credits that I took a photograph of, the equipment was supplied by Boone Army and Navy.
Wow.
And the guns were provided by Baptiste.
Always Baptiste.
And
it's always Baptiste
provided four beautiful Sterlings, which the lads were doing some cracking stuff with. Appreciated it.
They've given it some.
They really were. There's one bit where like a guy like is wounded and someone else picks up his Sterling and he's dual wielding. There's lots of like point shooting. No one deploys a stock. It's all like stormtrooper.
It's very commando book stuff.
Yeah, it's all Star Wars stormtrooper school of shooting.
Yes, great. Blast them.
Yeah, and there's some nice high power action. Like the protagonist draws a high power when he like Fireman's lifts the wounded guy.
Oh my god.
Which is baller. And I was quite pleased with the Argentine stuff too.
Yeah, that was fine.
Not bad, did it?
No, it's fine. They've got ponchos on, M1 helmets. One of them's running around with a G3 battle rifle.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah.
They've got M16s, but it's different enough.
Yeah.
You know?
I assume they're supposed to be like the Speciality Commando.
Yeah, something like that.
612, possibly. I can't remember the exact number. But they're supposed to be in Argentina.
There's just enough going on in the action sequences for you to suspend belief enough. You know, that there's a lot of close quarter combat, guys running around firing into like a window and running off. It's all implied pretty much.
Yeah, so the first bit's like set in, first set piece is in like an open field, and they're dropped off by the helicopter, and then they kind of run down a little scraggy hill.
Yeah.
Take cover. And then they go in and they're planting explosives, classic SAS raid type style thing. It's obviously like, it's the closest they could get to Pebble Island, isn't it?
Yeah. But you just reminded me of when they put that explosive down and it's like a bit of a ZX Spectrum keyboard.
Yeah.
It's got like a
QWERTY keyboard.
It's so weird.
And he's like pushing the buttons, like, what are you doing?
Right? Trying to get the tape to load. Come on!
It's going to be a time pencil. Come on. And they get blown, don't they? Their stealthy approach gets blown.
Mm.
And then one guy like smacks an Argentine with a Sterling in the face. And then lights him up.
It's really brutal. You know, if they'd had a budget, they'd have been a blood squib.
Yeah,
you know.
Would. Lots of blank though.
A lot of blank firing. Yeah, I think a lot of that. You can tell a lot of the film's budget went on these sequences.
Yeah,
And they got quite a lot of them out of it. There's a sequence where they steal a truck, and they go on like a bit of a rampage with it. We think there was a Bedford like for 10 seconds.
Yeah, Bedford or a Leyland, but it was
one of them.
It was a Bedford technical.
Yeah, that was an LDV van.
Oh, was
that
it? Wasn't that one.
Beddy.
Okay.
It was a Beddy in the background.
That's it.
It didn't get blown up, which is quite rare.
That is rare. They obviously didn't have the pirate for that.
They didn't have the budget. The Bedford was saved. But that's pretty much it for action.
There was a good sequence where they're clearing like a bunker.
That was decently done because it was dark. You couldn't see a lot.
Lots of point shooting, lots of like room clearing and stuff. Rescue a hostage.
Yeah.
It's complete like made up fanciful stuff.
It's commando book.
It is.
It really is.
Like there's every Argentine like bullet just completely misses them.
Yeah.
Like there's only one instance where like someone is wounded by an Argentine round.
Yeah. And they're carried back.
Yeah. There's a cool bit where there's an Argentine running away and the guy like drops his Sterling and draws his high power, cocks the hammer back and then fights.
Like the professionals.
Yeah, yeah. It was
very professional. Yeah, but then that really is a high point of the film. Because By that, I didn't realise that was a good pun.
High point, high power,
yeah. But after that, and during that sequence, actually, you're mentioning it's the movie takes a real turn. Mm. So we were wondering, what's the angle here? Because it isn't a straight action. It isn't anything like that. It's not like those like Terminator, Predator, Vietnam knockoffs that you get.
Mm.
It's not like that. And we're wondering, well, is it going to knock off like Second World War tropes? Is it going to knock off?
Where's it going?
Where is it going? So I think we might suspend favourite scenes and just have a general chat.
Yeah.
But like in the next section, we'll really try and explain this fever dream.
Hello, I'm Al Murray, and you're listening to Fighting on Film, the world's number one war film podcast.
Yeah, so difficult. So it's somehow anti-war, anti-army, but pro-Falklands War, pro, like, what the servicemen did and wants to respect them.
Yeah.
But then at the same time wants to really be anti-everything else. Mm. It's so weird. And then you get these dream sequences that are just...
Yeah,
bat shit off the wall.
They're supposed to represent the wounded soldier's trauma.
Yeah, and his like recovery process of getting back to life. And it's the tonal shifts all over the shop. So you'll have like him being like struggling to drink a glass of water and feeling sorry for him. Yeah. And then they'll cut to him having a vision of like a field full of skeletons.
Oh yeah.
And a poncho with no face in it. And
that was quite good actually.
It was good. It was well done.
Not that sequence. I just thought the poncho without a face was clever.
Oh yeah. I mean, you could see the guy wearing a balaclava backwards.
I knew what they were going for. It was, you know.
And if that's not weird enough, then they have really like uncalled for, just cut in
the most harrowing sex scene.
Oh god, yeah, we didn't even talk about the sex scene yet. Oh my god. So he's thinking about his home life before he went out.
Yeah.
And he was saying how he was in love with this woman, and you can't really hear half of what he's saying.
She gets reintroduced later on.
Yeah.
We actually meet her with her clothes.
We don't know
on.
Who she was.
Yeah.
But you see, it's like full frontal almost.
It is, yeah.
And we were just, I mean, obviously that is a hallmark of these kind of straight to video movies. They would put a pair of boobs in or something.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of titillation.
That, but
You know, it's like a trope. But you see quite a bit more than we were expecting. We were like, wow. Not one I'd watch with the family present. Like, good lord.
I wouldn't watch this with anyone.
I wouldn't know. I'd
just be honest, but
let us take the rounds. Let us take the hits for you guys. Because we, you know, this isn't one we don't recommend this one. One, because it's incredibly hard to find.
You know what? I tell you what, I do recommend it if you want to see the very first British Falklands War movie.
Yeah. It's like anti-ungentlemanly act.
It really is wild. It
really is. I wonder if Stuart Urban's seen it, because that would be very interesting.
I bet he's not. Like, 90% of people do not know of this film's existence. 98%.
Because even the cover art that we've found, none of it is like Falklands-y. No. It's like Rambo knockoffs.
Yeah.
And that's not what the movie is.
No.
But then after the sex sequence... Would you think that was like the weirdest thing you'd see? You know, you get this. There's two things. You get this really weird, kind of well edited, almost synth wavy type edit of like fast cut footage and pictures of the war flashed up,
like news footage montage.
Yeah, over some punk song we can't identify.
Yeah, Tribal couldn't.
And we didn't know what it was. It sounded a little bit like The Stranglers, but it's not The Stranglers because how could they afford the license?
Yeah. No idea.
And that's weird. That's a tonal shift. Intermixed with them having gone somewhere where it's clearly a ship in a dry dock somewhere.
Yes.
And they filmed in its engine room.
Oh my God.
Of chaps in DPM and like naval crewmen running out of it while they're like blowing up pyrotechnics in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, this is meant to be like the inside of one of the ships.
It was the Galahad.
And it's implied it's the Galahad, isn't it?
Because he's evacuated.
Somehow he was on the Galahad.
The Galahad. That's what he says anyway.
And then during that sequence as well, even just mad unhinged stuff that happens, you get like a in cockpit shot of a guy
of the Argentine pilot like laughing.
Yeah. Like really unhinged. Like intercut with the genuine footage of the trying to extract all the guys off.
Yeah, it's quite distasteful.
Really distasteful. Really, like, a bit poor. It'll be like, what is the tone?
I can't believe
the tone is all over.
Recreation.
Yeah.
We kind of knew
first and only time
it's
been done.
Yeah, from the dialogue, we kind of knew it was coming. But then when they actually did it, I was like,
That there's only one more time that the Galahad has been shown on a piece of drama, and it was a monologue type thing with British soldiers talking about how they became, how they got in the army, what, you know, what their expectations of life, things like that. And it's a drama.
Right.
And it was broadcast on the BBC once.
Right.
And at the end, you find out that they've not been talking in the barracks. They've been talking in the Galahad.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the big reveal. And it cuts away. You don't see anything. It's all implied. And that's tasteful.
Mm.
You know, because you don't have to
way
see it.
Way more tasteful than this.
And this just, it wants to hammer you over the head with, isn't more terrible, but then it does things like that. It's just tonally weird.
Mm.
But then you think that's enough. You think you're kind of like Alex in Clockwork Orange with the apparatus on his head going, please no more, please, I beg of you. And then we thought it cuts to red after that. You get more dream sequence. And then the only way to explain it is it cuts to the end of Apocalypse Now, but if it was shot for about £10.
Yeah. So it begins with some like feet shuffling in flip-flops.
Yeah.
And it's got like a weird score. And then it's the back
like
of
drums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The back of a shaven head, like a white linen shirt.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no. And then he sort of like, and for some reason, like the dude, the wounded soldier is fine. He's sat on the
floor.
He's
in the room.
He's got his hands tied behind his back. And this guy delivers a weird monologue with loads of like not subtle references to Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. And he's like, soldiers are a chess piece for the politicians playing their grand game.
He even says the horror at one point.
The horror as well.
Holds
his hand over fake candles, which was hilarious.
And then proceeds to cut open a pig.
Yeah.
Carcass,
what?
Which made no sense.
And he puts like blood on his face.
Yeah.
And it's...
Then he shows the soldier himself in a mirror and says, you are death or something.
The killer must look at themselves in the mirror every day or something. And I was like, wow. And
maybe the SAS soldier had watched Apocalypse Now.
And,
and his trauma was just recreating.
I mean, I can understand if this
dream
like,
for him. I don't know
if this comes out in like 1980, 1981, the film is still fresh in the memory culturally.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not in 87, but the reference is a bit,
it's weird.
It's very weird. I can understand it's him having like this flashback of like recovery.
Yeah.
And that's what it's kind of meant to be, but it's so badly handled that you end up coming out of it and you're like, what was that? And because you're thinking, you know, that I put the Krusty meme on Twitter. It's like, what the hell was that?
And then
that's
it
what
cuts
it was.
To like another sequence with the skeletons, and he's there with a Sterling.
Yeah,
and
they're rising
the skeletons
up.
Start rising up and shoots them.
And then
there's a British guy in DPM screaming, and then he shoots him, I think, and then
it
cuts.
Yeah, and that's it. That's the end of your film.
Well, it's not, because then his girlfriend, who is now clothed, arrives at the hospital because
she was clothed.
Yeah. Has arrived at the hospital because the journalist has given let her know that he's in the hospital.
Yeah, finally he can be. Yeah.
Yeah. And she like, there's a not so touching bit where they're like embracing, and it's
just bizarre. Like it was such a fever. I say it again.
Yeah.
But the tonal shift was all over the shop. And then you're like, well, what are you trying to say?
Mm.
Like if you're trying to say war's bad, like you've done it more successfully earlier on in the film.
Yeah.
You don't need to have these weird, like it's almost like art house stuff.
It is a bit, yeah.
It doesn't work.
Disco art house.
Like,
I mean, the most
Art Attack house.
The single worst thing of it is like the thing that really broke my immersion for the film is that
you mean it wasn't broken before that?
No. Like the sequences in the Falklands where he was walking through trees. And I was like, there's no trees. There's like one tree on the whole island.
Exactly. I know. It's, to cut a long story short this week, guys, please don't try and find this.
It was uploaded by the company that now owns the rights.
Right.
And I think there is one up there, but it's described as a documentary, I think.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Put a funny filter over it.
I've seen it uploaded, but I can't confirm that that is the whole film.
Right, it could be like an edited version.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know.
It's, yeah.
If you want to go and do some detective work, I think it's been uploaded legally by the film,
okay.
by the
film. I was worried, but I was being coy.
I know you were, but I think it's okay because I think it was uploaded by the rights.
But this one is a very weird movie. And if you're listening to these episodes in chronological order, the next film we'll cover is an asylum movie. And if you're a long-time listener of the show, you'll know we love an asylum film. But we're using this to soften soften the blow of watching this.
Talking about Shot Chaser.
I know, right? So come back next week where we will be looking at the Asylum's Assault on Hill 400.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening, and keep it frontalfilm.com for all the back catalogue. And we'll catch you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.